Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Kevin.
And I am John.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Who? Schwarzenegger. He's the icon of the genre. And we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies. And friends, we're breaking them all the way down.
Hi, John.
Kevin.
How's it going, buddy? Man?
I'm great. How are you doing? We seem to be caught up in the middle of some sort of storm. We hear the thunder is picking up.
If you hear a low rumble, it could be some thunderstorms rolling through Atlanta here.
That's right.
But we're going to plow through. We do it for you.
That's right.
Everything I do it for you. Brian Adams style.
There's no love like your love. Yeah, baby.
I die for you.
We're back to talk a little bit more about Raw Deal.
Raw Deal.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1986, wedged in between like more iconic movies. But
right.
This one's fine.
I still want to know. I would love if we could get our hands on some history of this movie to know how long it had been sitting on the shelf in Dino's office.
Yeah.
And like, who was originally slated to star? Like, was it supposed to have been a different genre? Like, I would love to know
Lee
more about
Marvin
it.
Or some shit.
Yeah, I could totally see Lee Marvin.
In 1976.
Yeah, something weird like that. But anyway, it ended up getting made and put out in the box office in 1986.
I think it was rushed out as Arnold was on his ascension.
That's right.
I'll try to catch us up on what's been happening here.
Tell us.
This FBI agent, former FBI agent,
That's right.
Kaminsky, Mark Kaminsky. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's he got run out of the bureau in disgrace.
For roughing up some perps.
Yeah, for valid reasons.
Right.
He was he's lucky that he got to resign and not get prosecuted.
So essentially, there was like an internal affairs investigation for him basically beating a witness or beating
near
a perpetrator.
Death, yeah, it sounds like
within an inch of his life, and they're like, hey, you can't do that. So we're going to either charge you or you can resign.
You can resign and go be a law enforcement officer elsewhere.
Yeah.
So he settles in, North Carolina.
Somewhere
being a small
in the
town
South.
Sheriff. He's approached by a former colleague in the FBI.
Harry Shannon.
Harry Shannon, played by the dad from Christmas Story. his son was killed, who was also an FBI agent.
Right.
Son was killed by some gangsters out of Chicago when they were trying to kill a witness who was going to testify mm-hmm. against them. So this Harry Shannon, he recruits Kaminsky to abandon his wife.
Right.
Go
small
undercover, infiltrate this mob family and bust him up from the inside. Also, this is all being done off the books, not official at all, fully illegal.
He's also sort of like tangentially involved with a woman named Monique.
Yeah. Kaminsky is sort of in the middle of a mob war between the Patrovitas and the Lemanskys.
Right.
He's trying to ingratiate himself to these guys, but they sort of don't trust him.
Right. Especially Max Keller, the enforcer.
Yeah. So he's, I guess, fed them a little bit of a idea of how they can steal back some money and drugs that were confiscated. He's like, let's bust in the police station and steal it back. By faking a bomb threat.
Right. And that's basically where we're at. It's like,
yeah.
They're like, yeah, the big bad is like buying into it. And like, why doesn't everyone think like this fucking guy?
It's really a very uncomplicated plot.
Right.
But I know I just made it sound very complicated. But
no,
it's really the most simple, basic plot you can imagine, to be honest.
We're good. We're caught up. So, yeah, the first bomb goes off. And the wheels are in motion now for Patrovita and his group to get the drugs and money that were taken earlier back.
Right.
So we open up at Patrovita's club where Keller, the enforcer, again, is pumping Monique, who Kaminsky met earlier in the movie. She's like this sort of disaster club rat that just had been like hanging out, like losing money.
She's bad news.
She's had some sort of relationship with Max Keller, the one of the, you know, the sleazy bad guy in the past. She owes him a bunch of money. We're not sure like why she gets to just hang around, but she does.
While owing all that money, they keep extending her more credit, it seems like.
I don't know if she's like some sort of madam that works for the company or like what the deal is.
And but she seems to be infatuated with Kaminsky.
She is obsessed with Kaminsky is the vibe that I get.
Kaminsky seems to be sort of going out of his way to not let it, not let them consummate the relationship, kind of,
because
he's married, I guess.
Yeah.
Although his wife doesn't know he's alive.
She thinks he's dead, so what's it matter?
I don't know.
Yeah, so we open at the club where Keller's pumping Monique for information on Brenner, who is, that's Kaminsky's alias.
Right.
And there's 80s excess all around, people in suits drinking bourbon, as are we, and champagne and all sorts of things.
Man, Keller has got it bad.
Yeah.
He's, remember that horse we used to look at? I bought it.
I bought it. Okay.
What fine. The fuck does that mean?
All right.
A racehorse, I guess?
So Keller is clearly jealous of Kaminsky.
He's also the proud owner of a new horse.
Yeah. but like, what the fuck? But Monique points out that this whole charade for her, like basically casing Brenner was Keller's idea.
She's been trying to get close to him to sort of vet him, I guess, for Keller.
But we start to get the idea that she's like really into him. So
fucking awful planning by Keller.
Yeah, big
time.
Hey,
baby, I'm so into this woman that I'm going to try to convince her to sort of get with another guy.
Sometimes we hurt the ones we love, Kevin. So Keller says it was never meant to go this far and that it was definitely supposed to be him and not Brenner that was like fucking her five times a night or some shit.
Yeah, but I get the impression that that hasn't happened
yet.
Yeah,
like, has anything gone that far? And how
is that what
like,
you think? Just, I get the impression that they haven't
He's
gone.
Just assuming. I think he's assuming because he's...
Jealousy's like, run amok.
He's an insecure man. So Monique says it's never going to happen between her and Keller. And then we get a great line. The only way we'll end up lying together is if we're run over by the same car.
Brutal.
That's awesome. One day, I hope a woman says that to me. Psych, I don't want it. Keller presses up on her, but like Kaminsky shows up and puts him in the Vulcan death grip. I like that Keller immediately seems to go for his gun, like he's gonna shoot.
I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah, Kaminsky pulls his first. Max, I don't think we're gonna be the kind of pals I'd hoped we'd be. I guess Keller was gonna kill him right there in front of everybody.
Also, I just think Kaminsky is like supremely confident that he's not gonna get shot in the back at some point.
Yeah.
Like he keeps fucking giving this guy a reason.
Yeah, I agree. So Keller like skulks off. She says, I'm impressed. He says, I'm hungry. Okay.
She's impressed by what? The fact that he almost shot a guy in the middle of a crowded
club? I don't get that she handled Max physically. I don't know.
Some women enjoy confrontation happening around them.
The kind of woman that they're painting her as being is into like men fighting
and
over
drama.
Her.
Yeah, she likes chaos.
So
did you notice the people dancing in the background? They were doing like essentially the Teen Wolf dance that Michael J. Fox did.
Oh
in
my
the,
God.
It was awkward dancing, awkward white people dancing.
I love
in the
it. They probably said, let's do the Teen Wolf. Wait, when was Teen Wolf made?
85.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right on time. Yeah, they just probably came from a screening.
That checks in downtown Chicago. So Kaminsky and Monique are having dinner, I guess, at the like in the quieter dining room of the club.
This club's got a lot of different areas.
It
does. It's like the Roadhouse. What was that place called? Double Deuce.
Double Deuce. There we go.
Double Deuce.
Yeah. So they're having dinner, and she says she's just fishing. She wants to have a fight or for him to profess his love. She's like, the more we know each other, the less you want to see me, she says.
I've definitely felt that way with women before.
Yeah, but
like,
it's like it's only been 2 days.
But the more it's like, But she's been like giving him every reason to not be interested.
So Kaminsky says he's been trying to protect her from Womansky's goons. Those men in the store, they'll come back.
I jotted this down because I think there's something grammatically wrong with this, right? He said, these guys from the dress store are going to be back and I don't want you to be around when they do.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that. There's a missing when they do be back.
When they do be back. That's not a thing.
There's something wrong. The tense
was I don't want you to be
up.
Back when they are or when they
were. It was like
or
the future present participle. Something was fucked up.
You
want
to rewrite that sentence. But I also, I think that Arnold delivered the line in his head and they were like, fuck it. We don't have any time.
It was like in a Disaster Artist when they were doing The Room and he's like, oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Like, yeah.
Holy shit. He got the line out. It's close enough.
Lisa, why?
Move on.
Yeah. So she admits, she says, I like you. And unless you're married, I'm not going in. I mean, she's putting it all out there and it's like,
yeah,
ooh.
She's letting it all hang
and,
out.
In one way, I appreciate it. In another way, it's like, we just met yesterday. So he says, I am in fact married, Monique, and I have been for a long time.
Talk about a mood killer.
Is it a bad move for this undercover operator to admit to being married? Like, you don't want to give anyone any legit information about yourself. Right.
I get the impression that Kaminsky's being honest, like that he does.
So this, yeah, but
that
it's
he's
like,
trying to be upfront with her, that he trusts her, I guess, though he shouldn't probably. No. We've seen, but I've not really sensed any actual chemistry or connection between them.
Not really. Myself. No, I have on her part, but on his part, I think that he's just been like very respectful.
He's been trying to like not let it happen. He's been trying to politely decline her advances.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger, man, he's an interesting case.
Yeah.
I feel like his romantic chemistry in movies is like just hit or miss.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's either got it with the Money. Person. Man, his chemistry with, what was her name?
With John Travolta's wife.
Yeah.
Kelly
Preston.
Yeah.
That chemistry was off the charts.
Yeah.
The chemistry that he had in Running Man.
Yeah.
With Maria Conchita Alonso.
Yeah.
Was awesome.
Yeah. But I also think this is early on, and this is like everything's rushed. There probably wasn't time, and I think that even those few years in an actor's craft, I imagine, would be extremely valuable in learning how to be comfortable with someone on camera.
But even later, you said you've never seen or maybe only once seen Eraser.
Like one time, I think I watched it with you. But
I think he was supposed to have like a romantic connection with Vanessa Williams, and it just was horrible.
I also
and
think
they axed that whole subplot.
I also don't think that like Vanessa Williams is any kind of great actress.
That's true, but
she's passable. She's talented, but she's not a great actress.
She has, like singing killer.
Yeah,
you know, but I don't sense that there's like a real soul connection, you know, between these two characters.
And honestly, I mean, Monique's kind of a vapid character, so he might just be, it might seem awkward because it's like, this is awkward.
I don't like you.
I don't like you.
I guess when I was drunk, I was into it.
Right. He's pumping her for information as much as she is him. So anyway, so Monique seems partly relieved, but mostly bitter about the fact that he admits that he is married. I guess the fact that they hadn't, she's like, yeah, I guess the fact that they hadn't bung yet was making her feel like she was losing her touch. She's like, all this great equipment and you're sitting on your hands. That's another great line. It's so like it's like neo-noir, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he says, you're important to me because you're my friend. You're more than a friend. But man, she is not hearing that.
I don't really blame her for being pissed, to be honest.
Yeah, I love it.
He's kind of led her on, and then he's like, actually, I'm married, though.
Well, all he did was tell the cab, we don't need you, and then drink all our champagne. That's all he did.
And then passed out without delivering the goods.
Yeah. She's like, when I want to make friends, I'll go to summer camp. Another great line. She goes to leave the restaurant, but turns back. I was sort of flattered. I thought you were going slow because you thought this was real important and you didn't want to blow it. But then she like takes off the dress, which isn't even really a dress. It's like a wrap that fits.
Yeah.
It's a gold wrap that fits around a black nightie wearing.
It wasn't the dress she bought. From the shop, was it?
I think it was the dress she was trying on initially in the shop.
And ran out wearing,
I think.
Okay.
So she removes the dress right in the middle of the restaurant and throws it at him. It's going to take me a long time to figure out which of us is the biggest asshole.
That was another strange flex, as you mentioned, a movie full of strange flexes.
Weird move, but whatever. She storms out.
I will say, this is a woman who is clearly not used to not getting her way.
Yeah.
Like she is throwing a grown up temper tantrum.
Yeah. It is reminiscent of like women that I've like, just went on like a one date with, and it was like, this person is legitimately crazy and we are never going to see each other again. But man, they are like gone to the, not like removing clothing in a public place level of crazy, but like causing a scene and being like, we don't know each other. What are you doing?
This reminds me of a certain ex that I try not to think about too much anymore. But yeah, just like, it's weird when you can run into a woman who's clearly not used to not getting her way.
I'm not okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, there was a God, I've had discussions with guys at work about, there's probably certain women who like could get through life with no money. Like they could just walk into a store and like start eating food or whatever and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I just don't have any money. And they'd be like, oh, that's fine.
That's fine.
You can go.
It's 100% fine.
I'm sorry, can I just have these clothes? Yeah, fine. That's okay. You can.
Yeah.
Like this is that type of woman.
Yeah.
But she's also can be charming.
She
and funny and all that. So I'm mixed on Monique.
I am mixed on Monique too. I feel like Monique's probably a product of hanging out in a mob environment. She's like Talia Shire in Godfather 2.
Yeah, like the spoiled brat.
Yeah.
That's kind of. I thought not near enough patrons in the restaurant were like,
the observing this.
That's that thing where you would expect the music stops, like the live band playing sort of stops. Now everyone's watching, it's but a like, lot of people were just going on with dinner.
This is the equivalent of Daniel LaRusso lying on the ground covered in spaghetti.
Imagine that happens, and yeah, half the customers are just still eating their dinner like nothing's happened.
They're like, don't look over there, darling. Eat your spaghetti. So she storms out. As she does, she encounters Keller, who, for the first of a couple or three times in the movies, walking around with just an overcoat slung over his shoulder, smoking a cigarette or something.
Comically like a long cigar, like very long.
So she like just picks up a drink and throws it in his face and then shatters the glass on the ground and storms off.
She is on the warpath.
And he like comically like looks over at Kaminsky, who's just like, this is the doofiest moment for Arnold in the whole movie, where he's just like, awkwardly folding the dress and patting it on the table. But I mean, what are you supposed to do in that situation? But
I don't know,
there are not enough people like looking around and like whispering to themselves like, what the fuck
was that?
He was
trying to play cool. Dude, I will say this was an amusing ass scene.
It was awesome.
And not a bit of violence, just sort of weirdness, generic weirdness and awesome.
Yeah, that's why I want to like try to redo this movie and see what we can do better. So anyway, we cut to Harry's place, where Kaminsky's breaking it down for Harry. He says the war between Petrovita and Lemansky is about to boil over. Harry seems happy with that idea of the bad guys just all killing each other.
Harry's crushing beers.
Yeah. They're drinking MGD.
I thought it was High Life. But
it's like in the little pony bottle. Yeah. Like, yeah. So
there were empties everywhere.
Yeah. Harry's been drunk for days.
I mean, he's had a bad few weeks.
Harry
or
hasn't slept. He's just been pounding Miller. I love it. Kaminsky says that the bad guys, that the Petrovita gang specifically, is planning to steal the drugs and the money back from the police. And in the interest of protecting Brenner's cover, they decide to let the heist happen. I guess.
I like Harry's logic. This is not the reason we're in this.
Yeah, if we like, so we just let it play out.
We're not here to stop crime. We're here strictly for revenge.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, there is logic to the theory that if they walk into a trap, they would assume that Brenner must be a cop or a rat or something.
Agreed.
But you could also just pull Brenner out of there.
Yeah, pull him out. He's gone. And then Ned would be like, okay, we don't fucking care where he went. What? Who was he talking to? Monique? Oh, yeah, that's fine. That checks out. He got scared of Monique and left town. So Kaminsky's like, I'm worried about me. But Harry's like, hey, you're on your own since this whole thing's illegal.
That's been the elephant in the room, I feel like, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Is it like, if something goes wrong, you're on your own because you're technically committing a crime by even... You're not working for the police, so you're just a gangster.
Don't forget you blew up an $8 billion building earlier in the movie, like whatever the fuck. Like, how many tens of
you're
millions of dollars?
You're a wanted man for
arson.
Insurance fraud
arson
and everything
on top
else
of arson.
Going on.
Kaminsky then's like, I kind of feel guilty about what this must be doing to Amy, his wife.
Motherfucker.
Who he's like, I almost called her.
She thinks you're dead.
He's like, but then he rationalizes, if we stop now, then all of this will have been for nothing. And besides, if I show up and I'm alive, Amy would probably kill me.
I like that he had like 5 seconds of indecision and he's like quickly, nah, I'm on the right path.
Yeah, no, this is the path for me.
Let's everything, go further down this road and see where good. It leads.
We're too invested in the process. So Harry says, hey, are you going to stick with this? And Kaminsky says, yeah, I'll carry on. He doesn't seem broken up about it because then he begins like talking about how sweet the life of Joey Pussy Brenner is. He never had it so good as he does in this mob life.
Talking about a lot of free time, lots of money, cars, women.
I'm there, man. Like the free time thing alone, I'm like, yeah, you sold me.
So he probably works like 20 hours a week max.
Yeah. So Harry's like, just don't get too caught up in this thing. Keep your head.
Are we supposed to think that he's starting to have doubts, Kaminsky? Like that he's starting to fall in love with the gangster life?
Nah, I think that he's literally just saying anything's better than my suburban life with Amy.
Yeah, and cakes chucked at me. Yeah. Man, Amy was a gorgeous woman, and I don't really blame her for being pissed at Kaminsky, the brutal cop.
5 years in
probably
the burbs.
A fucking abusive husband, if we're being honest. Oh, I'll ask that out. That's probably true.
We're not condoning that. That's bullshit, but I would not be surprised. I mean, if he's a man who loses his temper and goes overboard and like beats the shit out of witnesses,
it's the roid rage.
But I kind of get the feeling that she's just like he took away everything because of his behavior.
She lost her life.
It blew up their life. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't blame her, to be honest. But anyway.
So anyway, Harry says, keep your head about you. Later on, Keller and Kaminsky are riding in a car. Keller is telling him that the heist is going to happen in an hour. And we're going to hit Lemansky at the same time as a diversion.
I don't understand how this is a good plan. How is that a diversion?
Because the police will be like, holy shit, the other crime boss Lemansky's getting hit. Ignore this other thing that's happening. This is way more important.
We'll just, divide the police's attention.
I guess.
Bad Boys, the movie Bad Boys, sort of did the same thing in the opening where they were robbing drugs from a police impound. But they did it right where they're like, we're going to dress a guy in a police uniform and shoot him and then call in, oh, my God, there's a police officer who's been shot.
Right.
And that's our diversion. Not like we're going to take out fucking Don Corleone to create a diversion for our heist.
Yeah, to commit some petty cash robbery. So anyway, elsewhere, the guy that we saw earlier that did the first police bomb, he is hacking city phone lines.
Is that what was happening? It's kind of unclear. He's just in a weird...
It pays it back like as we go by beat in this scene. But yeah, he's like in some sort of like central junction for
There's
the phone
wires
company.
Everywhere. I guess it was the phone company.
He's hacking phone lines. And then what I reckon is that it's like so that
they're going to intercept off, that call
so they can intercept call. It's sort of like in if people are listening, it's sort of like what they did in Long Kiss Goodnight. It's like, can you create a dummy line to be a hotel, route the line from the hotel to this place?
Sure.
So I think that's what was going on. He radios that they're all ready. And then we cut to a police bomb squad truck rolling out of a garage. The guy's in the truck calling a bomb threat to the police station, saying that a bomb's going to blow up in 22 minutes. The police
He hung up the phone and he looked very proud of his performance, that guy. Like looking around in the truck to the other
goons. All the bit actors in this movie are hysterical.
Like, I did good, didn't I?
Yeah, I love it. So the police called the bomb squad and begin like evacuating the building. The white commanding officer that gives the bomb disposal and evac order is Ralph Footy.
Yes.
Who listeners might recognize as Johnny the detective in the fake movie Angels with Filthy Souls from Home Alone.
Amazing.
You know what? I'm going to give you snakes. I'm going to give you the count of 10. Anyway.
So I like that guy. I guess he's just like a working Chicago actor.
Yeah. He's since left us, but yeah, he was at the time, like, I bet he was probably at like Steppenwolf Theater, just killing the game.
He was like the police dispatch guy also in Blues Brothers.
That's right. And just such
another
Chicago, such a distinctive voice.
His mug. He looked, when I saw him and I was really studying him, I was like, oh, he kind of also looks a lot like an elder John Wayne type.
His facial features and everything. Yeah. He definitely looks like a leading man from a bygone era and sounds like one.
Yep.
A very distinctive voice. Too bad AC ain't in charge no more.
The guys keep the change, you filthy animal.
Keep the change. So the guys in the bomb squad truck intercept the call for help because the phone lines.
Right.
And
right.
say they're on the way and to clear the building. We see they've been on the radio also with Keller. Mm-hmm. The truck rolls up as people are streaming out of the building. The baddies dressed in bomb squad uniforms grab a bunch of gear and run in.
I found myself wondering, is that the real bomb squad truck that they stole from the police, or they made a dummy truck?
I don't know. It could be the same as like the Die Hard ambulance.
Yeah. It was on some Ocean's 11 shit, though.
Yeah, yeah,
like
totally.
Basically that premise.
Totally. So yeah, they proceed down to the bowels of the building and break into the vault. I had a sound effects nerd moment here. I love the sound effects of feet on pavement that are added in
the
post-production.
Pitter patter,
sort of? Just like clop, 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 clop. But like those guys are probably wearing rubber-soled boots.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're like wearing dress
leather
shoes in
soled,
church.
Like leather-soled shoes.
It gets even crazier when they're inside the precinct. I love that shit. Anyway, meanwhile, we're staked outside of a synagogue where Lemansky must be. Keller instructs his sniper to shoot Lemansky when he gets a clear shot. But there are too many people and the sniper can't get one before Lemansky gets in the car. I love that Kaminsky's like, don't you have a calendar? It's probably a religious holiday. Like,
yeah.
Like some, you know, like Jewish holiday.
At any rate, it's time to abort the plan, right?
Right.
Like, but nah, that's not Keller's style.
No. He's like, follow the car, but none too discreetly.
We'll take him on the highway.
Yeah, they peel out in front of God and everybody, pun intended, like not discreetly at all. So back at the police station, the baddies break into the safe, empty all the money out. I love when they blow the safe that everyone in the fucking neighborhood hears it, including the CEO. He's just like, ah, shit.
I think that was like the bomb went off, right? That's my thought, that
okay.
The bomb inside the precinct went off.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And he's like, fuck, the bomb squad just died.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bomb went
that
off.
That makes more sense. I was thinking he knew.
Oh,
he was
they
like,
blew
he's
the
like,
safe.
He's like, fuck, we're fucked. So anyway, as Keller follows Lemansky's car, he says he's going to run him off the road. I love driving scenes in any movie, but I love driving scenes in Chicago. It looks like they're on the North Shore, like up in the expensive neighborhood of town.
I mean, this has gone from a bad plan to a worse plan.
Yeah.
Like, how are you going to get away with this?
Yeah, it doesn't make any... Keller is essentially in a suit. I think that Keller is... He's sold on this mission because he thinks that, like, whatever happens... Like, if I'm going to die, then Brenner's going to die. It's like...
Got Kaminsky obsession, right?
Yeah, big time.
Even more than he's obsessed with Monique.
We talk about all the time in these movies how obsession becomes a major plot device. And this is completely true for Keller of Brenner.
In these movies, how many bad guys could have gotten away with it except that they're obsessed with the hero?
Yeah.
And I have to one up the hero, or I have to best him.
Hubris. Hubris will get
for
you.
Sure.
So Kaminsky says you're running the car off the road plan's not going to work because he seems to know that that other car is much heavier.
He has driven it.
That's also true.
We assume it's the same.
You are astute. Yeah, that's probably, probably the case. But Keller's like, fuck it. Shoot the driver.
Just
then.
Start not after you shoot the driver.
This plan is foolproof.
It is a terrible idea.
So Keller tries to pit maneuver the car and fails. The chase is on. Kaminsky's taking pot shots at Lemansky's car, but it's bulletproof. The bullets are like ricocheting off the glass.
There's not a hint of surprise on Lemansky or his goons' faces.
No.
Like they're just like, they look cool as a cucumber.
Lemansky seems just inconvenienced by like some rough cornering, and that's basically it.
It seems like there's school buses everywhere all of a sudden. Like I guess this is a weekday
lots
or whatever.
Of field trips to the field museum
or to the whatever it was, the
to
Navy
the Navy Pier.
Yeah.
So
where are the police? This is one of those moments that Ebert talked about.
Well, but they
like,
probably...
No one notices that all this shit's happening.
The bad guys have control of phone lines.
Oh, you think they've hacked the whole city?
I think that they've hacked any call that's being routed to police about this chase is being diverted to one of a Patrovita thug.
Let's chalk it up to that.
Yeah.
And not mention it again.
Roger Ebert. Roger,
yourself.
Ebert, if you're listening, I love you, but you were wrong. So the chase does continue through the Navy Pier, a great place to visit if you're ever in Chicago.
I did some Navy Pier research on this shit.
Okay.
Because I was thinking to myself, like, that's like a heavy tourist spot, right?
Yeah.
And it is now.
Not so much at the time.
In the 80s, it had sort of fallen into decline. I read that in 1989, the city sort of started working on ideas to revitalize that area. And in 1995, they sort of reintroduced the new Navy Pier with like Ferris wheels and everything. And now apparently it's like the second biggest tourist attraction in the city.
That's awesome.
But at the time it was sort of, you might have found it abandoned.
Yeah, they were like trying to figure out what to do with it. That makes sense. So the chase continues to the Navy Pier. Lemansky seems to be enjoying it now. He's like,
he's sort of smiling, run him into the wall.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's enjoying this because he's having his own hubris moment. So they're whipping around in this giant circle around a building.
It's at the very end of the pier. Yeah.
Yeah. And they end up like Lemansky thinks that they've duped them, that they've got them. And then all of a sudden, Keller comes whipping around a corner and then speeds toward him. So there's going to be chicken.
There's
this shootout as they're driving towards each other. But then as they get at each other, Lemansky's driver like swerves to miss. And then instead of keeping going, like stops the car.
They roll down their windows, their bulletproof windows.
Why?
And start exchanging gunfire.
Why didn't the guy keep driving?
Yeah. You're in a tank. There's no reason to put the windows down.
No idea. So
Kaminsky is just killing dudes with no hesitation.
Yeah. He shoots a couple of Lemansky's guys. The chase resumes then, which it should have never. Anyway. Into some kind of industrial area. Lemansky's car drives under like a low beam. He's like, grab your hats. And like it peels the top of the car off.
Which is always a great stunt.
Yeah,
that could have been the death of them all.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I guess.
Well, Lemansky at least is an astute observer of his surroundings, which is one of the first law of a crisis situation.
Oh, yeah. Wait, hold on.
Oh, be aware of your surroundings,
sure.
Or something like that. I can't remember from Twins. Anyway, it probably wasn't. Keep this in, though, to make us look like an asshole. So Keller screeches to a halt as Lemansky's car crashes into a fuel tanker and explodes.
It was a sort of a bizarre conclusion to the chase.
Anticlimactic.
Yeah. It would have been more satisfying, I think, if they had just all been killed by going under that low beam.
Yeah, like decapitated and let that be that. Okay. Meanwhile, back at the police station, the fake bomb squad runs out of the building and escape.
That was a well-executed plan.
It was. It was definitely like some Ocean's 11 shit. So elsewhere, Keller, like hours later, we presume, or maybe this is lunch
later
night
or the next day or something.
Lunch the same day. Keller's so hopped up on coke, he moves from one appointment to the next. He is at some sort of really nice restaurant high up in a skyscraper somewhere
like
in Chicago
type shit.
He's showing a picture of Brenner to a cop from Miami that says he does. Like, I don't recognize the guy. But like, this is where we get like Keller's obsessed. Did he fly that guy into town for the day to look at that picture? Fucking hell.
Did you also notice that Keller had circled Kaminsky in the picture?
Yeah.
That what?
Not me.
This guy. It was just the two of them in the picture, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, not me.
You recognize this guy, the circled guy? Not the one who's not me?
You can't, but you can't, like, yeah, he's so hopped up on cocaine, he's out of his mind. He's like, I don't want to confuse this guy.
So, do they have contacts in the Miami Police Department?
Sure they do.
Okay.
Sure.
I guess they are maybe importing drugs
from
South
Florida.
Yeah,
they're a national operation, yeah.
Okay, whatever.
So the cop says, you know, I arrested Joey Brenner twice, and that man is definitely not Joey Brenner.
Uh-huh.
That's intriguing.
Like, you've done your work, sir. Yeah. Here's your money.
Yeah, Keller passes the cop an envelope full of cash. We cut to a funeral home. Patrovita and Baxter,
what?
Exclamation mark, are having a clandestine meeting among the caskets.
A lot of
what
caskets.
The what?
I guess it was like the showroom.
Yeah, it is the showroom. It's like pick your model. So Patrovita is infuriated that law enforcement has infiltrated his crew without a warning from Baxter.
Mm-hmm.
Baxter says, no one got there by going through the proper channels, so how was I supposed to know?
Now, I guess they're just taking Keller's word or his intel that Brenner isn't really Brenner as gospel.
That's the only thing that they know is that we think that Brenner might be law enforcement, but all we know is that Brenner isn't Brenner. Right.
Yeah.
So Baxter appears to have told Patrovita that it's probably this Harry guy
mm-hmm.
who's seeking revenge for his dead son.
Harry's big fucking mouth got him in trouble.
Right. So Baxter says, I checked Harry's work and whatever he's doing is not on the books. Right. So there'd be no trail leading back to you, Mr. Pietravita, if Harry were to die.
Need an unfortunate end. That's some ruthless shit.
And then Pietravita's like, so who's going to do it? You?
Mm-hmm. No, he's like, I figure we could do it. He's like, no, there's no we here.
Yeah, no. And then Keller walks around a corner,
carrying
a coat over his shoulder like he is wont to do.
Clearly had been outside eavesdropping, just waiting for his cue.
I ain't been dropping a wee, sir. Honest. He says, let's make Brenner do it. Ooh.
Pietravita likes that idea.
Yeah, Pietravita's into it. Baxter tries to leave, but Pietravita says...
He loves a fucking elaborate scheme, that Pietravita.
Like a mouse in a maze.
It should have been Jack Palance fucking Perrette.
Like a mouse in a maze. So yeah, Pietravita says, if Baxter screws me over, he's going to pay.
Yeah.
So later on, Keller and Kaminsky, who can't get enough of each other, they're just in every scene together, are about to get into a car when Kaminsky spots Monique across the parking lot. He looks at Keller and says, I'll be right back.
Almost. Yeah, almost. And I'll be back.
Keller yells, we can't be late. So he runs. Kaminsky, uncomfortably, I might add, he's like, trots over to Monique. Monique apologizes.
It's going to be awkward.
Yeah, she's
sure.
Like, I'm totally apologizing for making a scene in the restaurant where I took off my clothes and threw them at you, but I'd really like to talk to you about all this.
She's come to her senses, yeah. I guess. I mean, honestly, she seems like a human being who could use just a friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get the feeling that she's sort of on her own.
Agreed. So Kaminsky gives her his keys, says, go to my place and wait for me to get back. She gives him a big kiss. I love that Keller is like just like... lurking over there, like honking the horn, like, quit kissing, you sons of bitches.
I did read the kiss as more platonic than romantic, even though it was kind of a long kiss. I did think it was sort of like a, I understand that you're looking out for me and maybe we can never be a couple, but I appreciate the fact that you seem to have my best interests.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mind. Kaminsky gets in the car. As he does, he gives Keller this like stare down.
Now, he definitely doesn't trust Keller, right?
No.
Plus, Monique had given him sort of like a warning almost, it seemed like, be careful. Or something like that.
So Keller blows a kiss to Monique. He's such a creep.
Uh-huh.
Then Keller...
Dude, great skyline shot.
All of this stuff in Chicago is like, having spent a lot of time in that town, it's like, it's such a great city. It's so atmospheric. It's like you see the wind whipping around them. Uh-huh. It's the Windy City for a reason. But it's just like Chicago's great.
I've never been.
Oh, man.
I need to go.
We have to go.
I do feel like, though, this movie did a good job of making use of the city.
Yeah. Chicago is a character.
The skyline, the landmarks.
Yeah. Big time. And like, New York gets such a bigger billing in movies as the location. But seeing this movie take place in Chicago is like... it's endearing.
Yeah.
So then we see Keller, Kaminsky, and there's a third goon in the back seat.
Man, I've seen enough gangster movies to know, like, just, you never let someone ride in the back seat behind you.
I'd have been like, you come sit up here. I'll ride in the back.
Right.
So, yeah, they drive up to a cemetery. And as they get out of the car, we see over, like, across the way, there's a funeral underway.
Uh-huh.
We also see someone kneeling at a grave.
Yeah.
Kaminsky says, like, who are we here for? And Keller says, just a cop.
We're
just
here to kill
fucking cop.
We're here to kill a cop. And Kaminsky seems okay with it.
Yeah. So they sneak up on the guy, guns drawn. We get like a cool like camera effect that you wouldn't. It's like a Hitchcock thing that you wouldn't
expect
to be. It's
the vertigo shit.
Yeah. It's the vertigo shot. So they sneak up on the guy, guns drawn. The man turns around and holy shit, it's Harry.
Harry.
Yeah. Like Kaminsky like muttered, like Harry under his breath. Waste him, Keller says.
Waste him.
And so the shooting starts. The priest performing the funeral next door dives into the open grave.
That shit was amazing.
Oh, my God. The third goon from the backseat wings Harry with a shotgun blast. Kaminsky shoots the shotgun goon. Then Kaminsky and Harry together gun down Keller, who dies in slow motion and weird sound effects.
What was Kaminsky going to do if it wasn't Harry? If it had just been a stranger,
I think he probably would have
Would he killed him?
I think that for me, you fake a jammed gun.
Oh, yeah, that, or you could just miss.
Except for it's a revolver, and revolvers don't
jam. You could miss.
Yeah.
Fuck, I missed, and then you hope the other,
Or you trip, I don't know.
We don't think he would have killed a cop.
Yeah.
Just to keep up the ruse.
It's hard to say. So, Keller's dead.
Quickly, unceremoniously.
Yeah. You think a big bad like Keller gets a bigger death, but as we've seen in so many of these movies, sometimes, as with Face in Tango and Cash, sometimes you get rid of someone too quick.
Keller's plans are the worst, though.
Yeah.
Like, this was a horrible
idea.
I
think this idea, again, is to put Brenner on the spot.
It was like we're going to test him.
It was.
Right?
They wanted him to kill Harry.
Or they wanted to see, it would prove to them whether he was a legit bad guy.
I think that if a plant. But that's what doesn't make sense at all, is that, like, what Keller should have done is yelled, waste him. And then, like, gotten down to see if Kaminsky would take the shot.
Well,
and if he doesn't, then he shoots.
He or the third goon needed to be right behind Kaminsky.
Plus,
like, if he doesn't do it, then we kill him.
Plus, there's no way in hell that you set up that meeting without a sniper there that takes everyone down.
Yeah, you have an extra crew there. It was just...
Man, we would be such good mobsters.
Keller is not a good tactician.
No. He's not at all.
Somehow he wound up into this situation with the upper hand and managed to get him and his goon killed by, like, I guess Harry was armed, but he wasn't prepared for a gunfight.
No, he didn't know what was happening at all. So anyway, Kaminsky, just like not in any big hurry, walks over to Harry, who's lying on the ground wounded. He's like, I didn't know it was you. And then Harry, in the most Dad Parker voice, says, well, that's all right.
Yeah, don't
you
didn't worry know. About it. Hey, we all make mistakes.
He sounds like Ralphie's dad. I can't get over it. So Harry tells Kaminsky to scram, but Kaminsky, like, wants to wait until an ambulance arrives. Harry's like, the ambulance is going to get here. If you're still here when the police arrive, then we're never going to be able to explain this.
Harry basically says, if the police come and I die, like, you'll never be able to explain what happened here.
Right.
Which is true.
Yeah.
It's true of this entire scheme.
Right.
That he's had going.
That this has all been a revenge killing plot.
So another pitfall of Harry's maniac plan.
Yeah. How quickly we forget that this movie is it's a revenge movie from top to bottom.
Here's the thing I never thought about before. Like, in a movie, this set or this location appears to be a real cemetery.
Yeah.
Is it weird that you're filming, like, a bloody shootout on top of people's graves?
Not to me. I don't care.
No.
To me, the act of burial in and of itself is, like, I understand it. It's like you're returning the body to the ground from whence.
Yeah.
Ashes to ashes, dust
to
dust.
And then it's just a piece of land.
But to me, it's like, desecrating a body is only desecration to people who are still alive. That body doesn't care.
Yeah. Another question.
Yeah.
First of all, I think that grave did not seem fresh enough to have been Blair's.
Blair.
It was like fully, but how long has it been since Blair was killed in your mind?
Maybe at this point, maybe 2 months.
Okay.
Maybe.
Recent. Here's what I'll say.
There's no way that Kaminsky's been in the Patrovita gang for, like, I don't know, maybe he is supposed to have been. Yeah, it's been a few weeks.
See, in my mind, I'm thinking, like, it's a month or less since the Blair killing happened, in my mind. I could be wrong.
Unless Harry has been stewing over it on a rampage for months and months
and
months.
Which you might be right, because
a year after.
There was a date on Blair's headstone.
Yeah.
That said he died in December.
Okay.
And this movie is clearly...
Almost a year later.
It was filmed in fall, for sure, because the leaves were fall colors.
I was
going
to say, it has to be almost a year later.
Unless we just chalk it up to that's the producer's hoping you don't notice, and it is supposed to only be a month or two later.
I would actually buy
that
it's
10 months later?
Yeah, I would buy that it's about a year later.
So he didn't approach Brenner for a good 8 months or something, 9 months after it happened. He couldn't let it go, and he's like...
He's like, I got to get somebody to help me with this thing. And he probably couldn't find anyone. He's like, oh, wait. I know this guy who would basically kill a witness. I should get him.
He gets off on killing people.
And that's what, I mean, that's the problematic part of this movie is that
it really is.
It's a dude that wants death. He wants revenge, and he goes and hires a guy that's okay with shit like that.
He wants an extrajudicial killing. So he seeks out a a brutal cop.
I know this guy.
To pay money to.
He's into it.
To basically murder people in cold blood.
It's fine.
This is our hero.
Right.
These are our heroes.
Right. So anyway, Kaminsky says, okay, I'll leave, but yeah. But he's like, I'll see you again soon. And all of the people like peeking up out of the priest peeking up out of the open grave.
Is it safe to come out now? It was similar to the moment when he drove through the casino or wrecked the casino. Cause the funeral goers just scattering awkwardly just in their finest.
And that, dear friends, we're not really sure how the rest of this movie is going to end. We're not sure how we got to this point.
We know it will end. And we're going to take you the rest of the way.
We'll be back. Once upon